Hi everyone, I'm Gary Noll. It's nice to have you with us today. From a very important 20 randomized controlled trials published in the current issue of the American Journal of Tropical Medicine Hygiene, they concluded that supplementing with zinc is associated with a significant reduction in the length of the common cold. That's very important. Or let me put it into a different context. For more than 50 years, there have been the skeptics and quackbusters who say none of this stuff works. And yet there are tens of thousands of articles in the peer-reviewed literature of PubMed showing it does work. So why is it that mainstream medicine is still listening to them and the major media are talking about what they say and not what the evidence says? So if zinc helps you with the common cold, what else could it help you with? We'll get to that. Also today, I'm going to play you a clip that reinforces what I've been saying that you have not heard before. And this is by a Nobel laureate, and he is talking about the truth about the death rates of COVID-19. Facts from the frontline. He's interviewed by Tony Robbins on this. And he is from Stanford University, tenured professor, has no controversy in his background. He has no allegiance except to the truth. So this makes two people from Stanford University, both professors, who are saying we got it all wrong from the very beginning, that we don't have all these deaths from COVID-19. Yes, we have deaths from other comorbidities, diabetes, heart disease, the very things that up to 3 million Americans die from normally every year. You don't want to miss that. And then I have a guest in the second part of our program, and I'm going to give her a whole half hour. Dr. Meryl Nass, that's N-A-S-S. She's in Maine. She's an internal medicine board certified physician. She's also an activist who specializes in treating people with Gulf War syndrome, the adverse reactions from the anthrax vaccine and vaccine safety and efficacy in general. She has testified on 6 separate occasions before Congress on behalf of veterans suffering from causes of Gulf War syndrome. We're going to ask her a simple question. What are the contradictions behind the policies to deal with COVID? She is one of America's leading physicians on this topic because she's been there a long time and she's been right all these years. So again, there's a lot that we need to talk with her about so we don't keep falling prey to misinformation put forward by both individuals. We're talking about individuals such as Trump, who I wouldn't believe under any circumstances because he has a long history of lying, but also Congress in general and the two-party system. They lie, and then the media parrots these lies as if they didn't have the resources, intellectual or physical, to see the truth for themselves. That's why so many people come here each day, because they know we'll give you the facts. And a short commentary I'm going to do today, very short, but I'd like you to call in. I'd like you to share your thoughts. I'm just going to put out the question, and I'm going to do it now. Because right after Health and Nutrition, which is going to be a little short today, so we can hear from you, do you believe that New York City is dead and is not coming back? Do you believe it will come back? And how will it come back? Are you optimistic or pessimistic, and why are you either? What tells you that this is not the place to live and to move elsewhere, or that it is the place to move or stay, and why? Your turn. I'm going to save my opinions because it's going to take me about, a half hour to lay all my thoughts out, to give you my thoughts, but I'm not going to do that today. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And also, let's go to this zinc issue. Now, if you were to Google zinc positive studies on health, Medline, you're going to come up with thousands and thousands of studies done at all of our most respected and prestigious institutions by good scientists published in peer-reviewed journals. But why isn't your nutritionist or dietitian or doctor recommending zinc every day to you? Well, that's something I cannot answer. I can only give you a subjective opinion that is based upon a principle that I came up with about a year ago. In fact, it was not quite a year ago. I came up with it when I was asked some questions during a lecture at our anti-aging, 90-day anti-aging study, 60 days on campus, and a person asked me, well, Gary, if you're right, and I'm not saying you are, how is it that 900,000 doctors are wrong? You're not a medical doctor. You know, so if my doctor tells me something doesn't work, why should I believe him? So I thought about that. I didn't want to answer in that moment, but the next evening I did. And for those of you in the study who were there, you probably will remember this. I said, how often in life do smart people do stupid things, good people do bad things? We don't get in trouble because we're doing good things more often than not. There are circumstances where that does happen, but more often than not, when you do something really bad, like eat junk food and you gain weight, become diabetic or have high blood pressure or heart attack, yeah, you knew better. Then why didn't you stop? When people are cheating on a partner in a relationship, which I adamantly do not believe in, I believe if you can't honor your partner, don't have the relationship. Just be honest with them. I'm sorry I can't be a partner with you because you're not the only one in my life. Just be honest. At least you're not betraying any spiritual values that you may have held if you have them. And more importantly, when someone entrusts you with their time and energy and love and capacity and joy to grow and share together, that's such a precious gift. Why would you ever think of betraying that? My God, how rare is it to have someone who says, yes, I'm willing to be in your life in a good way. I'm not bringing my drama, my crisis, my problems, my past. I'm a victim. Let's spend all of our time talking about my story. No, I'm bringing some joy and happiness and creativity, and I'm going to push the bar even higher. That's a blessing, that person. Why would you betray that? But people do. Men and women buy the tens of millions every week in the United States. Why would you not give absolutely quality time to your child, knowing they're only going to be that age that day, and the next day their day over? And suddenly we've got nannies and housekeepers and other people taking care of our children because maybe in this case, I'm only referring to professionals, because our careers become important, but we're sure that we're going to be successful enough one day that we can divide our time between our career, but more importantly, to those that we care about and love in our family and ourselves. Yeah. Now, name me where that happened. Oh, yes, it's happened, of course. Maybe 1% of professionals finally realize before it's too late, they can save the relationship, they can be an important factor in the development and character and values of their children. And there was a time, remember, when you went home, you had a mom and dad. You certainly always had a mom there at dinner, and then dad was there more often than not. From the 1920s right up through the mid-1970s, and it all changed. Well, then what happened to the value system that people were given when it wasn't from someone focused upon the importance of those values? So what I'm saying is this. We're a lot smarter at the intellectual and common sense level, the reason and proactive thinking level, than we are at the functional primordial level. Meaning, and here's the point, and this is for everything in life. You may aspire to a higher calling, a higher being, a higher state of consciousness. You may want to be the best you can be. Absolutely, and you can tell yourself and other people, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But then what happens is the dominant energy in your life, whatever that may be, collapses all other energies. Collapses the spirit, collapses the life force, collapses intuition, collapses sensitivity, everything gets collapsed, and now you're the dominant energy. Now, if it's a good energy or a mixed good energy, you'll succeed. And people will remember you by how joyful it was to be in your presence. The smiles that you put on their faces, the deep laughs that you shared with them, the spontaneous humor, making fun of themselves and you and everybody else because, well, people are funny. And that can happen and does. But now, what if it's the opposite? What if you're a professional and you realize that as a medical doctor or any other profession, you must play by the strict standards of what is acceptable and consensus-based, or you're threatened, punished, and then expelled and shamed? Now, when you see Linus Pauling and Frederick Klinner and Abram Hoffer and a whole list of individuals, some of the best and brightest on the planet, Nobel Prize winners, and they're they're excluded because they dared think differently. Vitamin C shouldn't be taken just 60 milligrams, but rather 18,000 milligrams a day, according to Linus Pauling. He was right. The scientific literature's on his side. Everyone else was wrong. Did they learn anything? You can't learn any lesson. You can't apologize. You can't acknowledge any sense of humility or contrition. You must stay arrogant. You must stay bound by the conceit of your paradigm, and you must fight back and try to attack the person who has truth on their side. Hence, we have today, we have a person in prison, probably will die there, Julian Assange. And yet he is one of the single, if not the single most important whistleblower in world history. He has committed no crimes, yet he has been treated like a murderer by our government, both the Democrats under Clinton and Obama, and everyone else in the neocon state, because he exposed them. And by Trump, who first acknowledged him, but based upon how duplicitous he is, he turned around and condemned him. And yet the public has not stood up for him, and yet we're the benefactors. Think of that. When we benefit from someone else's sacrifice, but we're such cowards, such gutless cowards, that we turn our back and let a person like Julian Assange, or any of the other, or Chelsea Manning, or the others, Drake, Benny, all of them, get absolutely crucified in modern-day inquisitions. Why? Why? Because one belief system collapsed all others, so you only have one truth. And that's a personal truth, that's a collective truth, that is a corporate truth, that is a political truth. If you're a Marxist, everything has to be seen through the lens of a Marxist ideology. If you're a socialist, communist, capitalist, but what if you are an ethical capitalist? You believe in making money, but not just to appoint yourself as being deferred to as that guy or woman who has this, 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 look at them. No, you use your money for the good of your community, which was done historically everywhere where I grew up. Every rich person was no different than anyone else in how they lived. We were all friends. Those of us come from a working class background, and Steve Haig and Billy Mildred and the others whose fathers, you know, were top people in the community, they never once were pretentious. We all went to the same school, different churches, but we all had the same common ethic. Don't brag. Be humble. Even when you succeed, look at your community, look at your family, look at your friends. We're all there to support you in your journey. So when there's a setback, which there inevitably will be, we've got your back. Where's that today? It's being mocked and ridiculed today. Family values are ridiculed. The nuclear family is ridiculed. And so those in power are collapsing everyone else's ethics down to their amoral or immoral ethic. And that's why pharmaceutical companies have no problem putting sterilizing agents through the Bill Gates Foundation and grants into children in Zimbabwe, or in Tanzania, or in the Philippines. Would we do that to all the children who are being born in Greenwich, Connecticut, in the upscale neighborhood, or all the parents on Park Avenue? Not on your life. But when you collapse all other beliefs, you collapse ethics and morality with it. So that was my answer then. And that's why doctors who could read the same identical literature, it's published in the American Journal of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene, will not recommend zinc because they have not been given the permission to do anything with those crazy quackery, no good supplements. Yeah. But we've been right all along. But being right doesn't matter. Truth doesn't matter. Facts don't matter. Biased opinion rules the day. And this was from the National University of Singapore. Now, another study from McGill University, which is a really outstanding university up in Quebec, broccoli extract increases drug-mediated cytotoxicity towards cancer stem cells of your head and neck squamous cell carcinoma. That's really good news because that's a very common cancer. So something as simple and expensive as broccoli, broccoli sprouts, could be helping with the neck squamous cell carcinomas or the malignant neoplasms with poor prognosis? Yes, they could, because they get to the cancer stem cell. You see, you can cut out all the cancer you want, but if you don't get the stem cell, it grows back. So that's good news. From the Mayo Clinic, medical errors increase following the spring change to daylight savings time. Seeking medical care after springing forward to daylight savings time could be a risky proposition. That's according to the Mayo Clinic, found a statistically significant increase in adverse medical events that might be related to human error in the week after the annual time change in the spring. I think daylight saving times is just absolutely stupid. It is meaningless, but it's there. And by the way, from Horokopoio University in Greece, they have a study about, are all vegetarian diets healthy? No, they are not. Not according to this, and they're right. You could eat a vegan diet made up of processed white bread, you know, pizzas with vegan cheese on it, and that's not healthy. Refined grains are not healthy, and French fries are not healthy. Sugar is not healthy. They're all vegan. So once again, eat only a healthy diet, vegan diet. And they found within a decade that those who followed a unhealthy vegan diet increased their blood pressure, cholesterol, and diabetes. And that combination puts risk to your heart. But on a healthy plant-based diet, the one we advocate, oh no, all that reversed. People are living longer. And from University of North Carolina comes a study that says that obesity is linked with a higher risk of COVID-19 complications. So from COVID-19 risk to recovery, the odds are stacking against those who are overweight. That's what it said. Now, I've told you all along, for all these decades, I've said there's no such thing as being overweight and healthy. It is not a physical possibility, because you have to understand the biochemistry of what goes on to your heart and to all the cells in the body when you're overweight. In any case, they really put it out here in this article. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Obesity Reviews. So that's the latest on health and healing. And tomorrow, or our next program, I'm going to talk about why we're magnesium deficient and what it means. What are the symptoms and signs if you're deficient magnesium? Ringing in the ears, unexplained muscle cramps, or depression, kidney stones, abnormal heart function, all kinds of bad things. We'll deal with that. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going directly into part of this clip, enough for you to get the message that, yes, our entire worldwide policy, the United States and Great Britain in particular, we have been wrong about our programs of keeping people all together, old and young, sick and healthy, in a quarantine environment. That was a disastrous impact, because the statistics on how many people were dead from COVID were wrong. Oh, by the way, some good news, and we keep giving you the good news, not on alternative therapy for COVID, I did that months ago, but rather on orthodox FDA-approved drugs. The latest study, and I want to thank Charles Ortlieb for sending this to me this morning, this is from Jennifer Byrne from Hemo-Oncology Today. Quote, the COVID-19 pandemic has prompted a flurry of scientific studies of various potential treatments and vaccines for the novel coronavirus. One such study, conducted by researchers at Rensselaer Polytech Institute and published in Antiviral Research, showed the FDA-approved anticoagulant heparin, that's H-E-P-A-R-I-N, may neutralize SARS-2, the virus that causes COVID-19. Quote from Dr. Jonathan Dordick, heparin is a large polysaccharide, so it will wrap itself around the spike protein. Once it does that, the virus ultimately disintegrates. And we know, by the way, that the SARS-2 COVID uses a surface spike protein to attach to human cells and infect them. And however, because heparin binds tightly with the surface spike protein, it potentially could serve as a decoy and prevent infection from occurring. So let's hope that that works. Again, that's right behind the 51 positive studies that we talked about yesterday, when the world's leading authority on epidemiology stated that, and you heard it on the air. So we're letting you know that there are at least 5 commonly used drugs. 3 of those drugs are known to be safe when prescribed properly, early in the condition, not at late, not when they're in intensive care. And all the peer review studies prove that. Clinicians have proven that. And yet Anthony Fauci has said no. And the CDC, no. The FDA, no. Why? Well, it's simple. You know the answer. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Basically, I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm not an MD. But I like numbers. And I sort of got into this accidentally through connections. My wife is a curator of Chinese art. We were in China in November. We have friends there. In any case, I had followed the outbreaks in China from the end of January, just looking at the numbers, making reports, getting very involved, because I saw how much it mattered to the people having somebody who cared. My first concern about the overall death rate came when the Diamond Princess cruise ship was becoming known. And I thought this would be a great experiment because almost everyone was infected. We could try to work out what was the, not the case death rate, but the population death rate. Because the trouble is if you can't believe in the cases, you need to know what fraction of a certain population will be suffering. One problem I had on the Diamond Princess was that I didn't actually know the age profile. It turns out that more than half the people are over 65. When you look at the death rate from the Diamond Princess, you find that for a regular population, not old people, something like 0.1%, one in a thousand, were dying on the Diamond Princess. That is higher than flu, but it's not, it's maybe a factor of 2 or 3 higher than flu. So when I saw this, I realized that maybe this was worse than flu, but it wasn't like SARS, it wasn't a 10% death rate. Since then, just a few minutes ago, I was looking at a paper from the Diamond Princess, and I now realize that that situation could have provided everything we need to know for dealing with COVID. They've now found many, many asymptomatic cases on the ship. They found a much, much higher effective infection rate. So that was the basic information that made me realize that it wasn't much worse than flu. I should say, though, that all my colleagues at Stanford tell me flu is a very serious disease. So yes. Don't play lightly with flu.
Yeah, you're so right. I mean, what's crazy is, you know, we keep hearing the descriptions of the flu like it's nothing, but we all know that it kills elderly people, and we have anywhere from 30,000 to 80,000 people a year that die of the flu in the U.S., 650,000 in the world. You bring up a really important point. When we turn on the news, the average person, what do we believe? We believe what we've been told. We see some of the doctors, Dr. Fauci and some people give us some input. We watch the news, and we have a red bar showing how many deaths and how many new cases that go on even during the commercials, and it's produced enormous fear. But you made a point, which is that the truth of the matter is we all have viruses in our bodies all the time. On Epstein-Barr, there's, you know, 220 million people in the U.S. that will have it at their time. According to the CDC, 90% of the population is exposed to it around the world. Yet we're not experiencing Epstein-Barr, most of us. We have streptococcus in the back of our throat. We don't have strep throat. We have cancer cells in our body. We don't have cancer. It's really a balance. And so one of the things you brought up that I was really interested in was seeing that these tests that we're doing are finding the virus, and people keep talking about the number of cases. And the more we test, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, the more virus, of course, we're going to find, the more cases. But what really matters is the death rate. Can you just address for us, you know, what does this really mean then?
So about the death rate in China, it turned out that there were 2 very, very different death rates. Inside Hubei, the death rate was almost 10 times higher than the death rate out of Hubei. And that didn't make sense because it's the same disease. It also turns out that this is the first time a disease has been detected by looking for the DNA or the RNA of the virus. So it isn't, I mean, diseases are normally detected by physicians looking for symptoms. And, you know, you don't know how much virus is needed. This ended up being, I think cases became a big issue for political reasons. Unfortunately, there's a huge amount of politics in all of this everywhere. I am a very apolitical person. I actually watch a sports game and I want either side to win. I don't really care. I like the game. This is very unusual. And, you know, I think that unfortunately science is difficult and you can't be partisan. And I think that there was a dynamic here, and a dynamic which I found very anti-scientific, that led to decisions being made. I think that the other thing that one has to remember, and I'm shocked by this, but epidemiologists don't mind being wrong on the high side. So if they come into it, you know, and this, I mean, in any other field, you need to have a balance error. You know, being 10% wrong on the low side is exactly the same as being 10% wrong on the high side. If you're an epidemiologist, to be wrong 1,000 times on the high side is much, much better than being wrong by a factor of 2 on the low side. So they tend to exaggerate. The World Health Organization has a record of exaggerating, and I think they do this deliberately because they feel that the public won't pay attention unless they really exaggerate. The trouble is, as you've said, there's huge collateral damage caused by the consequences of things like lockdown, of shutting down economies, people going hungry, people losing their savings, which apparently is not part of the epidemiologist's job to consider. So all of these issues lead to an unbalanced situation scientifically.
Now, you bring up the most important point. The decisions that were made based on estimating China's morbidity rates between 3.5% and 4.5%. And you still hear in the media 4% and 5% broadcasts of morbidity. And we now know that's not true. And yet it continues to be promoted. But you could see why someone would make a decision based on that. And, you know, they did their models. You know, when people talk about algorithms or models, what most people don't realize is you should put the word guesses next to that, because they're educated guesses by people's opinions of what they think it's going to be. And, you know, the numbers that the CDC put out, the NIH put out, Dr. Fauci put out, I wouldn't want to be in their position, by the way, pretty rough position. But their numbers were anywhere from 200,000 to 2.2 million, depending on which group you did. 2 million was the side. And that was with social distancing, because some people are saying, oh, we saved everybody with social distancing. But those were numbers with social distancing were the projections. And now it's looking like in the U.S. perhaps 100,000 people, and any death is insane. But as you know, 2 years ago in 2018, there were 80,000 people died of the flu. And, you know, there are 39 to 57 million people, according to CDC, that are infected right now with the flu. And we have 1.2 million with COVID, with similar morbidity rates, as you now pointed out. So I guess the real question is, we have new data, but we haven't changed what we're doing. And we also have data from both countries and states that didn't comply, which are very few. There's only, what do we have? I think it's four countries in the world that did not shut down, create emergencies and shut down their economies. So I can take a quick look at these to give you an idea. If you take a look at where the shutdown was the strongest and most extreme social distancing, you can look in the U.S. But if you look at New York and New Jersey, you can see very quickly New York has, you know, the state of New York, 19 million people and 25,000 deaths. New Jersey is 8.8 with 8,549 deaths. Now, don't get lost in the numbers. Just take a look at this. If you look at the top five countries, you can see the deaths per 100,000. You can see what they are, but you got to adjust for population. These are the four countries that did not shut down, and they did not legally require any social distancing. Many people are talking about Sweden because there's 10 million people in Sweden, and there's only 2,900 deaths. And if we went to the city of New York, it's about 9 million people with about 18,000 deaths. So the percentage per capita per 100,000 is through the roof. And in Sweden, as you know, Sweden is not shut down. They've had their schools, their preschools, and their grade schools open. The restaurants have been open. People are not forced to stand in line, you know, to get inside of a store and anything of that nature. So no mandate. You know, they ask people to practice social distancing. But interestingly enough, some people said, well, Sweden does have more deaths than some Norwegian countries. But when you compare them by ratio to France, or you take them to Italy, or you take them to the top five countries, their per capita is way lower, and they didn't do any of these things. Plus, of the 2,900 deaths, again, as you pointed out earlier, 80% of the Swedish deaths are between 65 plus, and 40% are from 80 to 90 years old. Japan is mind-boggling. You know, all four countries, by the way, did not have a major breakout, the ones that didn't practice what we've been taught. And by the way, I'm not telling people that are listening, don't practice what the government's telling you, don't practice social distancing. That's not what I'm saying. I just want to reduce the fear and have you address this. Japan has 127 million people. They reported 558 deaths in total. It's the slowest progression in the world. They didn't put their cities in lockdown. In fact, they had, what do you call it, dance places open, you know, clubs open up until about 2 weeks ago, and they got so much negative feedback. And of course, you know, some people say, well, New York, you know, if the entire United States was Japan, we'd have roughly 1,500 deaths by population numbers. Some people say, yeah, but New York is more compressed. It's not more compressed than Tokyo. If you ever try to get on a bus in Tokyo or a train in Tokyo, you know what I'm talking about. So you talk about herd immunity. The people in Sweden are saying we're almost to herd immunity because we didn't shut down. Tell me a little bit about herd immunity and tell me why are these countries that didn't practice anything or teach, these countries do not have giant breakouts. Statistical differences, even the Norwegian countries are, you know, statistically insignificant. So, and it's older people, as you pointed out. So can you address the idea, explain to people what herd immunity is, how we normally look at viruses, and perhaps tell us why are these countries doing so well compared to everyone?
Okay, that's just a short part of the clip. At least you heard him say that the numbers calculated the way they were are wrong. Therefore, our public policies of quarantining people are wrong. And in New York State, of all those deaths, 55% came from nursing homes. And that was because the governor allowed infected patients to go back to the nursing homes and infected and kill those people. So we've been given misinformation. Whatever their motive is, we will not know it now. But in the future, I'm pretty sure most of you know, it's about the mandatory vaccines. And if you live in New York, just remember, they're going to mandate multiple vaccines for you in there, Virginia, a few other places, California. And that's why, think about the consequences. You can watch the whole video by going to prn.fm. It's on our main page. Now, before we go to Dr. Merrill Nass and hear what she has to say about where she believes this virus came from, she has some, and by the way, she's very educated on the subject. She spent 30 years researching all this. Viruses and biological agents that the government secretly used. In any case, I just want to announce today we have a brand new creation. It's been 6 years since I created my last self-empowerment video, but we have a new one. And so just want people to know that I'm going to be talking about this, and it's called Regaining Your Spiritual Authenticity, Reconnecting with the Sacred of Life. I take on every major issue, social issue, personal issue, societal issue, everything from violence, where we should have peaceful demonstrations, to violent ones, what's going on, why are people confused about where to go in life, what to do with their own life, even to identify what's important at this point in their life because of the disruption in their life from this COVID virus, everything that you need in the way of addressing issues I address. It's an hour and 23 minutes long. Lots of good B-roll and material in here, and it's now available. I'm not going to go in any more today because we don't have the time, but you can call our number and get your copy of Regaining Your Spiritual Authenticity, Reconnecting with the Sacred. If you like the movie, the film I did, Love, Overcoming the Dark Side, Happiness, Anger, Taming the Beast Within, or any of those, this is right up and above those. Okay? People have been wanting to know when it's coming. It's here as of today. In fact, we'll be sending out copies on Monday. Now, also, just a quick, some of you dropping by the health food store, yes, in the last moment, this past Monday, after we've been closed for 2 days and we had trucks ready to haul everything out, the landlord said, okay, we'll sign a new lease with the store. So there has been a new lease with a reduced rent, but in the days leading up to the closing, we had to close out all of our accounts, about 50 accounts with distributors, and now those accounts have to be completely reopened all over again, even though with some they've been delivering there for decades. They all have a process, redo it, so it might take a week or two before you see the store fill with produce and food again because of that simple glitch. Good news for all of you who go by the Vitamin Closet and see Neil. Neil is now in our main office downtown on 35th Street. We're open 7 days a week from noon to 8, but let me give you Neil's number. You can call him direct. His number is 646-926-5430. 646-926-5430. If he's busy, call the main number, and you can place orders with Neil, because Neil has a lot of people who like him. He's very likable. spends a lot of time with people. He's even giving, he said, Gary, can I give away some free stuff? People come here. I said, sure, some videos. So Neil is now downtown in the main office. That's our new vitamin closet. 646-926-5422 is the main office number. Also today, we now have back, I was just informed we have back in stock today, super antioxidants. And we've been at it for a long time because the ingredients, there are so many different ingredients in this. And we finally got our shipment in. We're limiting it to 2 per person because we didn't get as many as I wanted. Now, we know we need antioxidants. But most people just take it like a vitamin C, which is good, or maybe a vitamin E, and that's good too. But I wanted to give you the mother load of antioxidants, all of them, in your body. So they're circulating, grabbing free radicals all day long, 24/7. So I put in here bromelain and carrot root and cabbage leaf and lutein and broccoli root and pine bark and taurine and superoxide dismutase and alpha-lipoic acid and N-acetylcysteine, coenzyme Q10, L-cysteine, reduced glutathione, green tea, grapeseed extract, red wine concentrate, bilberry extract, rutin, citrus bioflavonoids, raspberry leaf powder, tocotrienols, also lycopene, L-carnosine, astaxanthin, quercetin, copper, selenium, zinc, manganese, vitamin B6, vitamin E, vitamin C, 500 milligrams of vitamin C, and 10,000 units of beta carotene, all in 90 vegan capsules. It's back in today, and you're also going to get a video. I believe they're doing Age is Only a Number, a long video, but a power-packed video I shot all over the country about how to slow down reverse the aging process. So give a call. Here are the numbers. For the super antioxidant, it's back in stock today. Not a lot. I got as many as I could. I think we got like 1,500 bottles. I'd like to have gotten 5,000. They don't have the ingredients. So you can get 2 to a person maximum. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 for the super antioxidant. And you get a free video with it. Or the brand new video, which is, I haven't even played it yet. I'm going to play some of it next week for you. It is powerful. I mean, it is right on spot. And I just filmed it 2 months ago. And it just finished coming out of post-production last night. And it is called Regaining Your Spiritual Authenticity, Reconnecting with the Sacredness of Life. How to solve all of our problems in a different mindset. Okay? We're going to take a quick break and come back with our guests. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. Meryl Nash, NASS, is one of those unique individuals. She is capable of doing some really in-depth original investigations in science. She's a board-certified physician, and we're happy to have her. I gave you her bio earlier on at the beginning of the program, but for those of you just tuned in, we're going to talk about the contradictions between the policies by the White House and Anthony Fauci and the truth concerning COVID. Again, she is an internal medicine physician in Maine, and she's a super activist, and she's helped so many Gulf War veterans, and she looks for the anthrax vaccine and other vaccine safety and efficacy, and when she doesn't find it, she goes before Congress. She's done so on 6 separate occasions on behalf of veterans suffering from the causes of Gulf War syndrome. She's also active in opposing vaccine mandates and critiquing the false claims and fear-mongering about infectious disease epidemics and corruption within the medical industrial complex. She serves on the board of the Alliance for Human Research Protection, which is a nonprofit organization run by Vera Sharev that advances medical ethics that uphold human rights and protects humans from wrongful medical interventions. And she holds degrees from MIT and medical degrees from Mississippi School of Medicine. And her blog is anthraxvaccine.blogspot. Your earlier investigations into government or defense research into biologically weaponizing pathogens and vaccines goes back to your work with anthrax in the late 1980s, and later with the role of anthrax vaccine on the onset of Gulf War syndrome. And one of the issues was the engineering of the squalene ingredient in the vaccines. But there were other incidences where anthrax was used as a biological weapon with the support of the U.S. Defense Department. And one of the big questions that remain regarding the COVID-19 is its origins. Did it pass naturally, that we're told officially, from animals such as a bat to humans in Wuhan wet markets? Or was it engineered in a laboratory and then later accidentally escaped, or was it released by intention? We do not know the answer to these. And if you dare suggest, as many journalists have, that we must look at it being artificially manufactured, you're called a conspiracy theorist, and your work is suddenly scrubbed from all internet. So this is still being debated, but more and more scientists are entertaining the scenario that this particular strain originated in a lab. Would you tell us where you lean on this, and what is your evidence to support that? The forum is yours.
Thanks. So initially, I had not looked into SARS, the first SARS, the 2002-2003 SARS, in much depth, nor had I looked at MERS, which occurred around 2013-14, and there are still occasional cases of MERS. And these are two other deadly coronavirus infections of humans. All the other coronavirus human infections, of which there are about four or five others that we know about, just cause minor illnesses like colds. And many Americans, probably the majority, have had coronavirus infections in the past as colds. There are only about 8,000 cases of SARS-1 in the world that had a 9 to 10% mortality rate. And there were, less than 1,000 cases of MERS with about a 35% mortality rate. So when this, which is basically called SARS-2, the official name is SARS-CoV-2. The official name of the first one was SARS-CoV, or coronavirus is CoV. So this SARS-2 virus is similar, but certainly does not have a highly identical genome to the first SARS, which was eradicated, or possibly became weaker and went away by itself, was eradicated in China primarily, was also in Vietnam, in other parts of Southeast Asia, in Canada. There was a big outbreak in Toronto. They killed a lot of healthcare workers. So when this one came out, a lot of people assumed it would be like the first SARS, would kill a lot of medical workers and hopefully would burn itself out and be relatively easy to control. But it turned out this one spread more easily, possibly by a factor of 10. So the amount of viral load in your throat or your nose was, at the beginning anyway, estimated to be about 10 times what it was for the first SARS, which presumably meant that you could give people enough, an infectious dose of the virus 10 times more often or 10 times more easily or whatever. Now, initially, while yes, there was a big outbreak in Wuhan, and yes, Wuhan has a biosafety level 4 lab, which is the highest biosafety level in Wuhan, not next to the wet market, but a number of miles away. There are, many BSL-4 labs around the world, and BSL-3s. Coronaviruses are only required to be studied at the level 3 lab, of which there are probably about 1,000 of those around the world. So if you say that the coronaviruses had to be studied in BSL-3 and all the countries that were studying them cooperated with that, there's still about 1,000 places that potentially could have been studying a virus like this. Although there was a huge outbreak in Wuhan initially, and that's certainly where we first learned about it, there have been some suggestions from studying sewage and studying old cases in France, Spain, and Italy that suggest they too potentially had early cases in November and December of last year. And of course, we don't know exactly when the first case was in China, and we don't have good information from the Chinese. But the one that was reported apparently became symptomatic on November 17th or so and entered the hospital around December 1st in China. So there's a possibility that the spread was greater in China, where there's, of course, a very dense population, particularly in the city of Wuhan, which is a mega city, much larger than New York City. On the other hand, sure, this could have escaped from a lab in Wuhan or in, you know, one of at least 1,000 other labs. Now, why do I personally think that it is a lab creation rather than a naturally occurring virus from bats? Well, bat viruses don't jump species that often. If they have been growing in bats all along, then they're basically adapted to live in bats. And that requires multiple mutations. And to jump into humans and be adapted to humans requires, you know, multiple new mutations. It's much easier for a virus to jump into humans if it has already been adapted to live in human cells. And the only way that can happen is it's either gone through a bunch of people already or it's gone through human tissue culture, human cells in a lab. And you can grow any virus and attempt to adapt it to human cells by growing it in human cells in a lab. You can adapt it to mice by growing it in mice. I mean, there are many possibilities. So the fact that this was very adapted to humans when it first broke out into the human population, and the reason I say it did first break out into the human population last fall and hadn't been meandering through humans prior to that, is that there are ways viral geneticists look at mutation patterns, and several of these viral geneticists have looked at the genomes of different Corona 2 viruses over time and have all gone back to a single progenitor that first entered humans last fall. Okay, so I think it's pretty clear this first entered humans last fall or around then. Other things that would suggest a lab origin are the fact that the spike is well adapted. That may be part of the human adaptation. And this particular virus contains something called a furin cleavage site. Furin is an enzyme that human cells have, and it's also in the extracellular space. And it enhances the ability of this coronavirus to enter cells. Getting into cells is a problem for viruses. And to gain a furin cleavage site required it to have a new mutational insert of 4 amino acids. To make 4 amino acids requires 12 nucleotides, 12 different pieces of RNA that had to code for these 4 amino acids. And so this wasn't a single mutation. It wasn't 12 single mutations scattered around the genome, but these are 4 different new bits of RNA all in a row together, which enable this virus to have a furin cleavage site and utilize the furin enzyme that is present in human cells.
Meryl, it's getting a little complicated for people to follow. Let me just ask you a simple question. Is it your belief at this moment that this was human genetic engineering that caused the virus to be in its current pathogenic form?
Yes. So I'm sorry I'm going into detail, and the reason is I've been criticized for not explaining why I think this came from a lab. So I guess I'm overdoing the explanation. The other thing that we should know is that there were many labs, and much of this research was paid for by the U.S. government, by Australia, by China, and by the European Union. Many different labs were researching precisely the kinds of changes that occurred in this virus in labs. So the furin cleavage site was researched. The spike protein that had been humanized, this had been researched. So these pieces were known about in labs, and that is sort of further evidence that supports a lab origin.
Okay, one question here is very important. Are federal health officials, notably Anthony Fauci, supported by the Bill Gates Foundation, and Bill Gates, continue to push for a drug that our research shows is not a good drug, has lots of side effects, very high side effects. Some people are hospitalized in it. And yet we currently have multiple drugs that have been around for a long time that are very inexpensive that are working, including hydroxychloroquine combination. But the criticism against hydroxychloroquine was based upon earlier studies just using chloroquine rather than the hydroxy form, which is more, which works better. Hydroxychloroquine works better than chloroquine by itself, and plus zinc and azithromycin. Would you clear up this confusion over the safety and efficacy of hydroxychloroquine and summarize for us in lay language its use around the world?
Hydroxychloroquine is a derivative of chloroquine. Chloroquine is a derivative of quinine, and quinine comes from the bark of the cinchona tree. It's been used for malaria for about 400 years. Quinine has been around for at least 80 years, and British expats who lived in malarial areas had to drink it, and thus was the gin and tonic developed to make a drink through which quinine could be made to taste better. It's a bitter substance that's the active ingredient in tonic water. 65 years ago, hydroxychloroquine was engineered as an easier form to take, and it's been a widely available drug. Each of them is widely available. Chloroquine is considered an essential drug by the World Health Organization. It's on the list of essential drugs every country should have, primarily for malaria. And hydroxychloroquine is used in up to a million Americans yearly for lupus, systemic lupus erythematosus, and for rheumatoid arthritis. So there have been billions of tablets swallowed of these two drugs that are almost identical. We think hydroxychloroquine is a little safer, a little less, more effective for COVID, but in some Chinese studies, actually, the chloroquine was more effective, so it's not clear yet. Both of these drugs are very effective both at killing COVID, killing the SARS-CoV-2 virus, and they also have some immune modulating effects, but not nearly as strong as the antiviral effect, so that they may actually help the second phase of the illness when the immune system gets out of control and creates a lot of inflammation and scarring in the tissues. So there are good reasons to think this could work in COVID. The Chinese, back in December, January, had 20 different clinical trials that used chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine going. And there have been many, many dozens of clinical trials of one kind or another, just a few randomized controlled trials, but a lot of what's called observational data. So a hospital or a group of doctors uses this drug on patients and then collects all their data on all the patients, some of whom received it, some of whom didn't, and looks at the outcomes. How long were they in the hospital? Did they die? Did they require to go on a ventilator? Things like that. And the majority, about 75 to 80% of all of these studies, when lumped together, and there are about 80 of them now, show that the drug works. I have had experience using it in only one patient because here in Maine, we have one of the lowest rates of COVID anywhere in the United States. And in the person I used it in, they immediately got better. And in about 3 or 4 days, they were all better from feeling really miserable and thinking they may need to be hospitalized when it was started. So that's my single experience, but I've talked to many, many clinicians who have used it in a lot more patients than that, and they tell me the same thing, that if it's used early, it's like magic. It's like penicillin. It kills the organism, and you get better quickly. If, however, you delay and do not use it in the first week or so of illness, and you get into this hyperimmune phase, then you need a host of other drugs. You can develop terrible problems of thrombosis, bleeding, as I said, scarring, failure of the lungs, failure of the liver, failure of the kidneys, brain complications. It can be a really miserable experience. But if the drugs, and so hydroxychloroquine has been the main one. Zinc is also very important. It hasn't been used in all the trials. So in the studies that exist, there have been very few that use the combination of hydroxychloroquine, zinc, and azithromycin. It is believed by most doctors who use these drugs that that is the best combination. Some people use doxycycline instead of azithromycin. But the combination of this antiviral immune modulating drug, the chloroquine drug, zinc, and an antibiotic seems to be extremely effective. And in some studies where it's used early, you have 99.5% survival, much better than we have. We don't have good mortality data in the U.S., but if you look at the total number of cases and then the total number of deaths in the U.S., there's about 3% death rate of known cases and known deaths. Other people have improved this 4, 5, 6 times better by using these drugs.
Okay. Meryl, we're out of time. I'm going to invite you back for a full hour on our Progressive Commentary Hour. Would you like to come and talk about all the other things that you've researched so we understand the dangers of biological testing and how all this is in violation of a treaty, Geneva Treaty, that was signed where no country should be testing biological agents for repurposing mm-hmm. them to make them more enhanced. We'll have you back this week, all right?
All right.
All
great.
The best.
Nice talking to you, Gary.
Bye. Dr. Meryl Nass, our guest. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.